Hi, I'm Willow Belden, and you're listening to Out There, the podcast that explores big questions through intimate stories in the outdoors. Support for Out There comes from Fjällräven, making the outdoors accessible to everyone. And from GoTenna, a device that you pair with your smartphone so you can exchange texts even when there's no reception. Support also comes from Ecosia, a search engine that uses their ad revenue to plant trees. By using Ecosia when you search for things online, you'll be helping the environment without spending any extra time or money. Just head to ecosia.co/out to get started and plant your first tree. The past year has been tough, really tough. There was the mass shooting in Las Vegas, the New York City terrorist attack, the Sutherland Springs shooting, multiple terror attacks in the UK, the opioid crisis, deadly wildfires in California, ethnic cleansing in Myanmar, an earthquake in Mexico, sexual assault everywhere, Hurricane Harvey, Hurricane Irma, Hurricane Maria, and that's leaving politics out of it altogether. It's gotten to the point where when I turn on the news in the morning, I instinctively brace myself for a new catastrophe. Like, every day, I assume something terrible will have happened overnight. And when disaster becomes the norm, it's hard not to feel overwhelmed by how terrible everything is. It's hard to see the good in life. With Thanksgiving coming up, we wanted to share a story that brings a tiny ray of sunshine into a dark time. A story that reminds us that there is still some good in humanity. The story comes to us from Maya Croth, a reporter who lives in Mexico City. This fall, a magnitude 7.1 earthquake hit Mexico. It was the deadliest quake in a generation, killing hundreds of people. But in the weeks after the earthquake, Maya watched something happen out in the streets of Mexico City that made her think about disasters a little differently. Amidst all the death and pain and hardship, this tragedy actually ended up bringing out the best in people. I'll let Maya take it from here.
Way out west, all along the Pacific coast of Mexico, there stand about 100 sensors listening to the earth. They look kind of like cell phone towers, and their job is to absorb and record every tremble and vibration. They're monitoring a tectonic battle of the wills between the North American plate and the Cocos plate, a battle that has lasted a billion years. These sensors send a constant stream of radio waves to a data center, where computers pick through the noise to find the signal. Earthquake. In seconds, they locate the epicenter and calculate the magnitude. If it's strong, they'll send a message to the thousands of loudspeakers that line the streets of Mexico City. Loudspeakers that started showing up after 1985, when a massive quake leveled the capital and killed almost 10,000 people. The noise that the loudspeakers make is the worst sound I've ever heard. This past September 19th, the sensors were listening when the Cocos Plate warped, setting off the magnitude 7.1 earthquake that you probably saw on the news. The alarm is designed to be an early warning system, to give people time to grab an emergency bag and get outside with seconds to spare. If you live in California, you know the drill. Duck and cover, right? But here, the trauma from the 1985 quake still runs deep. I mean, entire apartment blocks just collapsed. So people run outside. Outside is where they feel safe. Exactly 32 years later, to the day, Mexico City was convulsing again. By the time the alarm reached the loudspeaker mounted outside my bedroom window, the shaking had already started. I was living on the fourth floor of an apartment building that, even before the earthquake, was tilting several inches to the right. Over the years, it had settled unevenly into Mexico City's squishy topsoil. We had to put 5-inch blocks under two of the legs just to keep the bed level. Every time a heavy truck drove by, the building wobbled. It was like living on a waterbed. On September 19th, it felt like being on the Titanic. It's stupid, the things that go through your mind in a crisis. When I realized this shaking wasn't caused by any truck, all I could think to do was put on my jeans. I wasn't thinking batteries, portable radio, bottled water, change of underwear. No, I was thinking about what the neighbors would think when they saw me outside, still wearing my ugliest nightshirt at 1 in the afternoon, the super soft one I can't bear to throw out even though it's full of holes. I heard a crash, something shattering, then another. I tried to remember earthquake protocol. Was it still right to shelter in a doorway, or was I supposed to lie next to the bed? I stood on 1 foot in the hall, trying and failing to shove the other one into my pant leg, while the world was probably ending all around me. I guess this is it, I thought. This is how it ends. A body half-dressed, a life half-lived. Then, after about a minute that felt like a year, the shaking stopped. I raced for the exit and found my downstairs neighbors, 2 elderly sisters, huddled near the door to their apartment, gripping each other with white knuckles. One of them was praying in a language I couldn't understand, not Spanish. She might have been speaking in tongues. We made our way out onto the street, where hundreds of people were gathered together in clumps. They stared down at their phones, trying to get a signal, text family and friends that they were all right. Or they looked up at apartment buildings they were now too afraid to go back into. Over the next few days, videos passed from phone to phone. A gas line exploding. A textile factory demolished in seconds. An elementary school reduced to rubble. Hundreds of people just gone. In my old neighborhood, 4 buildings collapsed within blocks of each other, and there were still people trapped inside. Nobody knew how many. Official information was non-existent. Everything was coming from social media. Within a couple hours, somebody had put together a crowdsourced Google map with the locations of all the collapsed buildings, temporary shelters, hospitals, and donation centers all across the city. Someone on WhatsApp said there was a donation center nearby that needed insulin. I picked up a few doses at a nearby pharmacy and started walking. And I brought my recorder with me.
It's Wednesday, September 20th, around 10:30 in the morning. People are gathered here bringing water, toilet paper, medical supplies, baby food, pet food.
In my old neighborhood, Colonia Roma, there's this pretty plaza with a huge fountain in the center. It's usually full of tourists taking selfies and people enjoying a leisurely lunch at one of the fancy restaurants near the roundabout. But after the quake, it became a giant collection point. Volunteers coordinated the whole operation, directing people to leave bottled water to the left, diapers to the right, medicine over there, and so on. There was an army of motorcycles, scooters, and bicyclists, too. The idea being that nimble vehicles could zip through the gridlocked streets faster to deliver people and supplies where they needed to go. I headed for the medical area, where a young man with a white coat, tired eyes, and a stethoscope around his neck took the insulin and thanked me. Thanked me. He looked like he'd been up all night helping people, but he thanked me for my 5-minute trip to the pharmacy, with a sincerity in his face that put a lump in my throat. I kept walking. A few blocks from that plaza, an entire 6th-floor office building had pancaked. All that was left of Alvaro Obregón number 286 was a violent snarl of rebar and slabs of concrete 2 feet thick, stacked one on top of the other. Somewhere in there, almost 50 people were trapped, mostly young accountants in their 20s and 30s.
Typically, this is a neighborhood where you would see people jogging in the morning, or going to brunch, or walking their dogs in one of the parks here. But today, it's a very different tone. Tents are set up in the park where another donation center has been established. Shops and restaurants are mostly closed.
Nearby, whole apartment buildings dissolved into mountains of brick and debris, scattered with the artifacts of people's lives. People wheeled suitcases full of whatever they could grab from their condemned buildings. A woman walked past me on the street, silent tears streaming down her face.
There doesn't seem to be a ton of organization or central authority running things. It seems a little bit haphazard, but for the most part, everybody seems calm.
I talked to people on the street about what they'd seen, where they were when the shaking started, how narrowly they'd escaped being trapped themselves. But one of the most powerful things I heard that day was silence. Picture a busy intersection at mid-afternoon. A bunch of makeshift tents are lined up on one side of the street where volunteers are collecting and distributing supplies for the rescuers. Hard hats, pickaxes, goggles, masks, bottled water, tamales. Then, all of a sudden, everybody raises one fist in the air, and all you hear is this. Silence. Only one thing could get so many people in one of the biggest, most bustling cities in the world to all decide to stay quiet, knowing that human lives were at stake.
The silence you just heard was a call from the workers. They raised their fists up, and that's a sign that means be quiet so they can hear the cries of people that might still be trapped in the rubble. So everybody put their fists up, and quiet fell over the crowd.
I had been keeping it together, but the immensity of that moment got to me as I kept on with my tour of the scene.
Here at a nearby restaurant, they've set up tables out front with coffee. And water and juices and things like that.
Hey, it's Willow again. We'll come back to Maya's story in just a moment. But first, a word from our sponsors. Support for Out There comes from Ecosia, a search engine that uses ad revenue to plant trees. Their goal is to plant 1 billion trees by 2020 in areas that are suffering from deforestation. All you have to do to help them reach that goal is start using Ecosia when you search for things online. Like, instead of always going to Google, you can use Ecosia some or all of the time. It's an easy way to make a very real difference without spending any extra time or money. And just to give you a sense of how big a difference you can make, it takes about 45 searches to generate enough money for one tree. Many of us do that many searches in just a few days, which means you could realistically plant more than 100 trees a year, you personally, just by searching for things on the internet. To get started using Ecosia and plant your first tree, just go to ecosia.co/out. That's ecosia.co/out. And of course, we've got a link to that on our website. Support also comes from Fjällräven. Fjällräven makes durable, environmentally friendly gear for outdoor enthusiasts. The company's North American CEO, Nathan Dopp, says the company got started because the founder, who was this Swedish guy named Aki, loved being outdoors, but he wasn't satisfied with the gear that was available back in the 1950s. So he started making his own stuff.
They're really, you know, founded on necessity. You know, how can I stay out longer? You know, what will protect me better from the weather? How can I carry more weight into the backcountry?
Fjällräven's products range from clothing to backpacks to tents and sleeping bags. You might have seen their popular Kanken backpacks around. All their gear is designed to let you enjoy nature without worrying about your equipment or about its impact on the environment. For more information, visit fjällräven.us. And now, back to the story.
In the quake of 1985, when buildings in a neighborhood called Tlatelolco came crumbling down, help was excruciatingly slow to arrive. One group of neighbors decided they couldn't wait for the government any longer, and they went in and started digging people out of the rubble themselves. These were just normal people, risking their lives, not government employees who were paid to do this. 30 years later, these same men and women, some in their 70s now, have evolved into an elite search and rescue team that's helped disaster victims around the world. They've developed a technique for tunneling into collapsed buildings to find survivors. They call themselves the Topos, the Spanish word for mole, and they're all civilian volunteers, not paid a dime. One guy told me the Topos set the example for Mexico. They were the reason he was out here volunteering, in the rain, at night, on no sleep, to do whatever might be necessary to help save a life or just make things a little bit more comfortable for those who'd lost everything. And there were thousands of people like him, like the Topos, anonymous somebodies coming together to help the cause. Some of them cleared rubble one bucketful at a time. Others made hundreds of sandwiches for exhausted rescuers. Others offered massages and Reiki therapy. Everybody doing whatever little they could. It seemed to me like the vast majority of the disaster response was being done by volunteers. Not the government, not the military, not the police. Just people showing up for other people. Mexicans showing up for Mexicans. If this had happened in the US, I think I would have waited for someone in charge to tell me where to go and what to do. But here, it's like everybody knows that nobody is really in charge, so they just do it themselves. At times, this was inspiring, like when a male volunteer who'd had both legs amputated showed up for duty on the rescue brigades, ready to help. Or the little boy who was turned away for being too small to work. Instead, he wore a sign that read, "Free hugs. Want one?" It's moving, right? But let's not forget that in many cases, there's no other option. These were people who were just used to their government not taking care of them. Almost 2 weeks after the earthquake, rescue operations continued at Álvaro Obregón 286, that office building with all those people trapped inside. There was a sickly, sweet smell in the air, the smell of death. And volunteers were still asking the public to donate supplies, but this time it wasn't just diapers and bottled water, it was urgently needed, 5 16-inch diamond blades for concrete saws. I can't believe people's lives depend on volunteers crowdsourcing tools on social media, one concerned citizen tweeted. It had been 2 weeks, and family members were still waiting on any news about their loved ones trapped inside, still sleeping in the street under tarps that barely kept out the torrential rain that fell every night. I remember thinking, really? The government can't get these people a cot? A journalist from Telemundo even went on the air to offer President Enrique Peña Nieto driving directions to the site from the presidential mansion just a couple miles away. Like maybe he just forgot how to get there. He never showed. There's nothing like an earthquake to make you feel small. Mother Nature sighs, shrugs off a kink in her neck, and whole cities are changed forever. The September 19th earthquake killed 369 people, nearly half of those in Mexico City alone. It was the deadliest earthquake to hit Mexico in a generation, killing three times more people than California's last two major quakes, Loma Prieta and Northridge, combined. The day after the earthquake, I saw a man arrive to one of the spots where an apartment house had come down. He must have been in his 70s. His clothes were shabby, and in his hands he held some old tools, a rusty wrench, some kind of crowbar. He waited patiently behind the police tape to find out how he could help. I couldn't get over that image, an old man with old hand tools. How inadequate it seemed in the face of all the wreckage. And yet, that's exactly how Mexico would get out of this. One tiny bit at a time. People relying on other people, because we all share the same humanity, the same responsibility. It's true, natural disasters can make you feel small, but this one made me feel something else, too. It made me feel part of something bigger. Some great invisible tapestry that connects us all. I wouldn't wish a disaster like this on anyone, but if there's a silver lining to these kinds of things, it's that shared hardship can bring out the best in people. It can help us break out of our bubble of entitlement and find compassion. And when we tap into that compassion, even the smallest gestures can move mountains.
That was Maya Croth. She's an independent journalist and radio producer based in Mexico City. Her work has appeared in Foreign Policy, The Washington Post, New York, and the Christian Science Monitor, among others, and on the Women of the Hour podcast. Her website is mayacroth.com. And I should say, she's also been on Out There before. Her previous piece was called Another Channel. If you haven't heard it already, go check it out. I've got a quick announcement to make in just a moment. But first, a word from our sponsor. Support for Out There comes from GoTenna, letting you use your smartphone even when there's no service at all. GoTenna is a little device that pairs wirelessly with your iOS or Android phone, and it lets you send texts and GPS info to other people regardless of where you are. The company started in Brooklyn after Hurricane Sandy, when there were massive cell phone outages on the East Coast. They wanted to create a device that would let you stay in contact with your friends and family no matter what, whether you're out in the wilderness or caught in a natural disaster, or just traveling abroad without an international phone plan. All you have to do is buy the device. There's no subscription or service plan you have to pay for. You just get the thing itself and you're ready to go. Oh, and I should say that in addition to letting you send texts and GPS data, GoTenna also has an app that gives you detailed offline maps for any region in the world. For more info, just go to GoTenna.com. That's go T-E-N-N-A.com. We have a link on our website, of course, and you can get $25 off your purchase with the discount code OUTTHERE25. Okay, so one quick announcement before you go. I'm putting together a bonus episode, and I'd love to have some of your voices on it. I'm curious what's resonated for you most about Out There. Which stories or moments have made a difference to you? How has the show helped you navigate life decisions? And what would you like us to do differently down the road? Just record a quick voice memo and email it to me at willow@outthereshow.com, or you can give us a call at 800-599-2598 and leave a message with your thoughts. Please do it soon, though, so we can include some of your comments on the upcoming bonus episode. A big thank you to Andy Martin, Laurie Richardson, Thomas Flensted, Rich Otterstrom, and Deb and Vince Garcia for their financial contributions to Out There. If you haven't done so already, you can make a donation of your own through our website, outtherepodcast.com. Just click support. Even though you're hearing sponsors on the show these days, we haven't quite broken even. And listener support is our most reliable source of income. We really do count on you in order to get the bills paid so we can keep making the show. That's it for this episode. Our theme music was written by Jared Arnold, and our marketing and business development director is Alex Egger King. Happy Thanksgiving, and as always, have a beautiful day, be bold, go outside, and find your dreams.